I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, a top Syrian military official defects. UAE authorities arrest several terrorism suspects. Egypt's upper house of parliament convenes for its first session following the ratification of a new constitution. These stories are all just ahead. A top Syrian military official has told a pan-Arab TV station that he has defected and has joined Syria's opposition movement. A video published on a social media website shows the general, Abdulaziz Jassim al-Shalal, as saying he left the government because the Syrian military police have strayed from their primary mission. Shalal had headed the feared military police. As the conflict grinds on in Syria, its neighbors have been increasingly feeling the effects of the fighting. Henry Ridgewell reports Turkey to the north is struggling to deal with a refugee crisis and a resurgence in tension with its Kurdish minority.
The centuries-old bazaar in the Turkish border city of Antakya is a trading point along the ancient Silk Road and for millennia has been a center of religion and sectarian conflict. The city lies just a few kilometers from Syria and has become the Turkish headquarters for rebels of the Free Syria Army who are trying to oust President Bashar al-Assad. It is most evident here in the border province of Hatay that Turkey is being pulled ever deeper into Syria's conflict. In Antakya earlier this year, VOA interviewed Ahmad al-Kanatre Abu Hamza, the commander of the Omar al-Mukhtar Brigade of the Free Syria Army. He says the rebels need international help for a no-fly zone because Assad's jets are firing on unarmed people and targeting anything that moves. President Assad's jets and helicopters are still firing on Syrian towns and villages. In October, Turkey fired shells into Syria for 6 days in a row in response to Syrian artillery falling in Hatay province. Fadi Hakura, a Turkey expert at Chatham House in London, says Ankara has overplayed its diplomatic hand.
It exaggerated its influence vis-à-vis Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria. The Turkish leadership also assumed that the Bashar al-Assad will collapse quickly, and that did not happen. So what we see now in Syria is a protracted sectarian civil war, very quite destructive, and that's a scenario that Turkey did not plan for.
The consequences of that destruction are spilling into Turkey. The daily flow of refugees has, on occasion, exceeded 2,000. Most are housed in sprawling camps, where the tough conditions are made worse with the onset of winter. Ankara has called for the international community to do more to help. Meanwhile, the Syrian conflict has reignited Turkey's long-standing battle with Kurdish militants known as the PKK. Syrian Kurds now control a larger swathe of northern Syria after government forces withdrew. Robert Lowe is manager of the Middle East Centre at the London School of Economics.
For the Turkish state, the development of what is becoming an autonomous region for Kurds in northern Syria is very troubling. It's deeply unwelcome to them. I don't think they've been terribly sure how to respond, and they're very worried that that will strengthen the PKK in its fight against the Turkish state.
Lowe says the Syrian civil war is not only dragging in Turkey, but also neighbouring Lebanon, which has witnessed an upsurge in violence along sectarian lines, and regional powers Iraq, Iran and the Gulf states. While Syrian rebels appear to be making gains in some areas, analysts say neither side appears strong enough to tip the balance of the conflict. They predict events in 2013 are likely to take a growing toll on the Syrian people. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A suicide car bomber has detonated explosives near a U.S.-run military facility in Afghanistan, killing several people. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack, which took place Wednesday, near the facility known as Forward Operating Base Chapman. The facility is located in the city of Khost near the Pakistani border. Authorities in Afghanistan say that a female policewoman who killed an American contractor in Kabul this week was an Iranian national. However, they have not presented any evidence that the woman has links to militant groups or that Iran itself may have orchestrated the insider attack. Ayaz Ghul reports.
The female police officer is being interrogated for killing Joseph Griffin, a 49-year-old American advisor to Afghan police. The shooting took place at Kabul's police headquarters and is being described as the first known insider attack by a woman. Interior Ministry spokesman Siddiq Siddiqui disclosed at a news conference on Tuesday that the attacker, identified as Nargis, is a native Iranian and is married to an Afghan who works at the ministry's criminal investigation department. Siddiqui said the police woman illegally obtained her Afghan citizenship identification with the help of her husband before joining the National Police Force 5 years ago. He said she apparently acted alone. The spokesman described the mental condition of the police woman as unstable and said he has no evidence that would link her to militant groups involved in terrorist attacks in Afghanistan. He said she holds an Iranian passport but offered no evidence that Tehran was involved in the shooting. Monday's attack has once again raised questions about the ability of Afghan authorities to manage their country's security after most foreign troops pull out of Afghanistan by the end of 2014. At least 60 coalition members have been killed in such incidents this year, referred to as green-on-blue attacks, and they have severely undermined trust between foreign and Afghan forces as they jointly fight the Taliban insurgency. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
UAE authorities say several arrests have been made in connection with a terrorist cell that was planning attacks in the Gulf Kingdom, Saudi Arabia, and nearby countries. The official WAM news agency said the group had acquired materials and equipment for a terrorist attack. Important stories from around the world. It's all right here on The Voice of America. Egypt's upper house of parliament has convened for its first session since President Mohamed Morsi signed a decree putting the new constitution into effect. The Sura Council today swore in 90 new members appointed by Mr. Morsi. Mr. Morsi signed the decree late Tuesday after the election commission said almost 64% of voters had backed the constitution in this month's referendum. Activists in Egypt have created a makeshift museum to chronicle the last 2 years of uprisings and political protest. VOA's Al Pessin visited a branch of the museum that has been set up across the street from the presidential palace in Cairo.
Opposition protests continue several nights a week in front of the presidential palace. But during the day, when the street is quieter, anyone passing by can stop at the Museum of the Egyptian Revolution, a roofless collection of wooden frames draped with plastic-covered photos and written memories.
We'll go inside to see the wall of revolution.
Wael Abu El-El is one of the museum's founders.
If we'll see from here, it's the first day, all the cars and the police, when he attacked the people. And after that, the Battle of Camel.
He's proud of the collection and says it serves an important purpose for Egyptians who come by to see it.
It's the Facebook and Twitter for everybody, because about 18% of Egyptian people, they haven't account on Facebook and Twitter. And they didn't have a connection with the young people who make the revolution. And they didn't think about how they feel. Anyone want to write anything, he go inside, he say what he want, and we'll put it in the paper. And if he want to put it in the wall, we'll put it for him. The day after, he come with family, and the family write also. It's the same way of the Facebook and Twitter.
For Abu El-El, the most emotional item in the museum is one of the newest. It's a poster showing his friend and fellow activist Al-Husseini Abu Dayf, who was killed just a few days earlier in a clash with supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood during a protest over the new draft constitution.
He's like our brother, he died. They choose the pitter in the revolution and shot them. And we say to Husseini,
will complete the road until we get your rights or we die with you.
For liberal activists like Wael Abu Elel, the revolution is not over and the museum's collection will continue to grow. It can be a cathartic experience for visitors and a chance to share memories and emotions of a momentous period in Egypt's long history. Al Pessin, VOA News, Cairo.
This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington. Thanks for joining us.